From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the first draft is $1.2 trillion. The border crisis is getting even worse, and is the COVID shot mandate even legal? Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. The Senate just released the draft of its infrastructure bill, and you'd think that with its $1.2 trillion price tag, we'd be getting a lot of new roads and bridges. But that's just not true at all. Joining guest host Joseph Backholm on Wednesday was Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri to talk about it.
Senator Hawley, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me.
Well, my first question for you, why is there social experimentation in the infrastructure bill?
You know, it's a great question. I think the answer is that this bill isn't about infrastructure. This is about the woke politics of the left. And this bill is part of their woke left-wing social agenda. You see it with this gender identity language that is in this bill. You see it with the Green New Deal that is in this bill. You see it with their quotas for this, that, and the other that's in this bill. So this is really about their woke left-wing agenda. It's about forcing that agenda on the American people. That's why Joe Biden is so enthusiastic about it, and it's why I'm opposing it.
Are there components of this infrastructure bill? Because, again, most of us, when we think infrastructure, we think roads and highways. We think the parts of government that we're supposed to agree on, right? There are some things government should do. They should help us build highways. And when we think infrastructure, that's what we think about. Are there things about this bill that there would be general agreement upon but for the social policy?
Well, you would think that if this bill were actually just to focus on roads and bridges, waterways in my state of Missouri, that would be something that we could agree on. But that's not what this bill is. And that's why I say I don't think it really is an infrastructure bill. It's been hijacked by the left to become a left-wing, woke social project. And it's fueled and funded by pork barrel spending. So what you have is a bill that's going to cost over $1 trillion for the working people of this country. And what's it funding? It's funding gender identity projects. Literally, that's in the bill. What's it funding? It's funding getting rid of every school bus in America and replacing it with electric vehicles. It's funding other elements of the Green New Deal across the country. I mean, that's the priorities. Those are the priorities of this bill. And that's why I'm going to vote no, and I hope that every Republican does.
Now, this is a big bill. It's 2,700 pages. I would understand if you hadn't digested every word of this. But how exactly are they trying to integrate gender identity into what they still are calling an infrastructure bill?
Yeah, the great part about that is it's in the section about digital infrastructure, so about broadband. And that just shows you that the Democrats here and the White House, who are the principal writer drafters of this bill, are willing to hijack any and every portion of it. So in the section ostensibly about digital infrastructure, broadband, there's gender identity language, there's gender identity tracking that goes on here, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, this bill is chock full of woke left-wing projects in every title of the bill and every aspect of the bill. And I guess it shouldn't come as a surprise because, again, Joe Biden and his team negotiated it. Biden is all for it, and it enacts his left-wing agenda.
And I do think it's interesting how much, and we talk about gender identity, I don't know how broadband necessarily would be transphobic. I don't even know if that's the allegation. But it is strange that Biden, being the generation that he is in, has taken this gender issue and made it such a passion project of his, as he apparently has. Now, you joined six other Republican senators in a statement where you referred to this essentially as a liberal wish list. What other things, in addition to the gender identity component of this bill, trouble you most?
Well, I mean, take the Green New Deal elements that are in the bill. I mean, all kinds of investments in Green New Deal projects, climate change projects. Then there's money spent here to tear down racist highways, quote unquote. Who knew that highways could be racist, but apparently they are. So this bill, again, is chock full of the Democrats' agenda. It is chock full of their CRT, their critical race theory agenda, in terms of what is inspiring their policies here and the rhetoric behind it. It's chock full of their social agenda. It's chock full of the Green New Deal agenda. And it's all paid for with pork barrel spending. I mean, this is going to be over $1 trillion in spending, and they're just warming up because part two is coming next week, where they want to spend another $3 trillion. So it is leftist politics fueled by pork barrel spending.
Now, on that point about spending, your colleague Senator Lee from Utah has taken on the spending component of this pretty directly. And you mentioned the fact that this is $1 trillion, but next week we got $3 trillion. And not to mention the other trillions that have been spent in an emergency context, allegedly, over the last year and a half because of COVID. Why is it that so few people seem to be concerned about how much money we're spending in Washington, D.C. anymore?
Well, probably because a lot of people don't know about it. But I think if they knew what we were spending it on, or more exactly what Congress is spending it on, the White House, they would be stunned. And that's why I think it's so important to do the kind of reporting that you're doing. It's why it's important to read these bills, by the way, because you wouldn't know any of this based on the press releases from the White House or from people who are in support of this bill. But if you actually take the time to read the 2,700 pages, what you'll find is that this is a woke left-wing bill, and that the spending is really in service to that agenda. And that's just not something that I can support. I think we can do so much better than this. I mean, the bottom line is this is totally the wrong agenda for the country. What the country needs to be focused on is rebuilding our economy, getting working class jobs back in this country, getting this economy growing again, getting inflation down so that people can actually afford to put food on the table, for heaven's sake. That's not what this does. This doesn't do any of it. This just pursues the Democrats' leftist agenda.
Now, this bill, all the headlines about it referred to it as the bipartisan infrastructure bill, and it's just kind of become unofficially part of the title. But you're raising these concerns. What's your sense of the Republicans in your caucus? Are your concerns shared? Is there going to be widespread or even unanimous opposition to this when it finally comes up for a vote?
Well, I sure hope so. I sure hope that any Republican who is worried about the leftist agenda of the Democrat Party, the hard left woke agenda, their cultural social agenda, will say no to this bill. I'd hope that would be every Republican. I would hope that anybody who's concerned about massive pork barrel spending in service of this kind of woke politics would say no to this bill. So we'll see. I don't know what the final vote would be. I just think it's so important to get the facts out there and to let people know what's really in this bill and to say we can do so much better than this. And I hope that Republicans will rally and take a stand and say no to the Biden agenda and yes to a better agenda for the American people.
Senator Josh Hawley, thank you so much for taking your time. And thanks for your standing for what is good and true in the Capitol. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You can find out more about Josh Hawley when you visit tonyperkins.com. We also invite you to join Tony Perkins every morning on Facebook as he shares a devotional from our 2-year Bible reading plan. And you can be a part of that reading plan. Just look for details over at tonyperkins.com.
With the growing hostility we're seeing in our culture towards God's truth and Christians, it is imperative that Christians pray, stand for truth, and seek after the Lord. Join FRC and FRC Action President Tony Perkins for the Pray, Vote, Stand broadcast. This weekly half-hour program features experts, elected leaders, and Christian leaders who can help you discern how to engage the culture and understand current events through a biblical lens. Tune in at PrayVoteStand.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Even as COVID-19 and the Delta variant are making a comeback, the federal government is possibly missing the biggest super spreader event since the beginning of the pandemic. But to set up our conversation about that, here's what President Joe Biden had to say this week about the COVID-19 shot.
Every federal government employee will be asked to attest to their vaccination status. Anyone who does not attest or is not vaccinated will be required to mask no matter where they work, test one or two times a week to see if they've acquired COVID, socially distance, and generally will not be allowed to travel for work. Likewise, today, I'm directing my administration to take steps to apply similar standards to all federal contractors.
Joining me to discuss this is Congressman Michael Guest. He's the vice ranking member of the House Homeland Security Committee. Congressman Guest, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Joseph, thank you for having me this afternoon.
Well, to start off, just give me your perspective about what's happening at the southern border right now.
You know, what we're seeing is the situation continue to deteriorate on a daily basis. I was on the border along with several other of my Republican colleagues earlier in the year, and the situation was dire there. But as we continue to see each and every day, those numbers continue to get worse. The last numbers that we have that have been reported by the Department of Homeland Security for June were 188,000 illegal aliens who were encountered across the border. We expect the numbers for July, based on what the media is reporting, to be somewhere around 200 to 210,000 individuals. So each and every day, we see the situation along the border continue to get worse. We as Republicans have been talking about this now really since the very beginning, since January, when President Biden was sworn in and taken office. But the thing that people are starting to pay attention to with the spread of the Delta variants of COVID is the public health risk associated with letting so many individuals cross our border, either untested, because and we know almost everyone coming across the border is unvaccinated. So we're having unvaccinated and in many cases untested individuals that we are allowing not only to come into the southern part of our border, but we are then allowing them to travel across the United States, spreading potentially COVID strands, which we do not have in the United States, across the country.
Now, I want to get to the coronavirus component of this, but are the rising numbers of people that we're seeing at the border, is it as simple as they see an opportunity to come that didn't exist previously, so they're coming in larger numbers? Is it that simple?
I think that has a lot of messaging, has a lot to do with it. I believe, based on everything that I know and the individuals that I've spoken to, is that the people in Central South America, in Mexico, are getting the word that our borders are open, that if you come, particularly if you come with a child, that you will be allowed to stay in the country and that you will then be allowed not only to stay, but that you will be transported to your destination so that you can then link up with family members or friends who are in the United States. And so I think that when the current administration came in on day one, they stopped funding of the wall along the southwest border. We also saw them decide to not implement Title 42, which was under the public health emergency, to families. And we also saw at the same time the Remain in Mexico policy stopped very shortly after President Biden was sworn into office. So these policy changes, they are being exploited by drug cartels, who are often being used to transport illegal aliens across the country to give them safe passage. And so what we have seen as it relates to international drug cartels is now they have branched out from not only bringing illegal drugs into the country, but now serving as a transportation route for illegal aliens to come across the border, and they are profiting from their illegal activity.
You say that people in Central and South America have gotten word that if you bring a child into the country, the United States government will essentially deliver you to any destination that you want. If that's their impression, is that also their experience when they do come?
In many cases, yes. If you are traveling with a child under 12, the law, as the United States is applying it under the Biden administration, allows those individuals to come across the border regardless of their COVID status. They are allowed entry into the country, and they're allowed not only to stay in the country, but if there is no housing in the local area, what we're seeing is either government or some cases, some of your charitable organizations are paying to fly illegal aliens to across the country. When I was at the border, we were there in McAllen, we saw family units there with envelopes. Those envelopes would say, "I do not speak English. Please help me to my destination." And they were given plane tickets paid for ultimately by the United States government to travel to their ultimate destination. And so that is the message that the illegal immigrants are hearing, that our border is open, that if they come with a child, that they will be allowed to stay. And the other rush that is pulling these people into the country is the talk of amnesty that we're seeing in Washington, D.C. As part of the budget reconciliation plan that the Democrats are currently working on now, one of the things that they are talking about is granting amnesty to those individuals who have illegally entered the country. And so there is a rush to get in the country before that legislation is debated, before that legislation is ultimately possibly passed and signed, so that there would be a pathway to citizenship and amnesty granted for those people that come into the country legally.
And not only are they getting the word that the country is open, but remarkably, American taxpayers are paying the freight for the trip, it seems. Now, the other angle on this is the COVID dynamic. And at the top of the segment, you heard that clip from President Biden, who is getting strict with federal employees. But is there a double standard in the way that he's treating federal employees and people who are coming into the country illegally right now with respect to his concern over the coronavirus?
Clearly, there's a double standard. What the president is saying as it relates to Americans, hardworking Americans, Americans who are employed by the federal government, is if you want to keep your job and you don't want to be tested on a regular basis, we are going to require you to receive a COVID vaccine. What he's telling the people who are in the country illegally is, one, we may or may not test you. Even if we test you and you test positive, we're still going to allow you to remain in the country and we're going to allow you to travel abroad. We see that the administration is talking about requiring individuals from foreign countries before they enter the country to make sure that they are showing proof of COVID vaccination, but that it will not apply to the southern border. So clearly there's a double standard for individuals who are, one, trying to enter the country legally, and there's also a double standard on what he expects federal government employees to do versus those people who are breaking the law and who are illegally entering the country along the southwest border.
And what's curious about this, one ICE official told Fox News that while the vaccine is being offered to those coming into the country illegally, he estimates about 30% of them are declining. And the opportunity to decline is something that the president doesn't seem to want to offer to federal employees right now. There's also a part of the story is in McAllen, Texas, and the mayor of that town, it's a border town, has issued a state of emergency declaration. And this is what he had to say. And I'm going to play this and let you respond to this.
I declared a declaration, a disaster declaration a couple of days ago for the purposes of trying to get assistance from the federal and the state government. Now, look, I know you all are angry and we get the calls, we get the texts, we get the emails. But look, I ask you to please do not misplace your anger. It is not our commission that's responsible for this. They did what they had to do to protect each and every one of you.
Now, the reports are that his town is getting 1,800 new illegal immigrants deposited into his town by the federal government every day. What's your advice to Mayor Villalobos there?
Well, what I'll say is I empathize with him because clearly his community has been abandoned by the federal government. You know, the president appointed the vice president as czar over the border to help solve this issue. And we have seen that that has been a complete failure, that the president refuses to acknowledge that what we're seeing along the border is a crisis time and time again. When asked, he refuses to acknowledge that. But what we are seeing is we're seeing local elected officials, Republicans and Democrats there on the ground. They are saying that this is a humanitarian crisis and this is a public health crisis, and they are crying out for help for the federal government. And it's past time that the federal government reach out to these local communities and see what we can do to provide them the manpower and the resources that they need, because they are clearly on the front lines of what is happening along the southwest border.
What help do you believe the federal government should be offering to those towns like McAllen, Texas?
You know, I think what we should be doing is we should be reinstating the successful policies of the Trump administration, reinstate the Remain in Mexico policy, reinstate the Title 42 for all individuals coming across the border so that they can be very quickly returned back to their country of origin. We need to restart border construction so that people know that we are serious about securing our border. We need to have additional federal agents who are down there helping to deal with the surge that we're seeing. And we also need to help those communities financially. Many of those communities financially are having to put extra resources, extra manpower to deal with what they're seeing. And so there is a financial component that the federal government should be helping with these local communities.
You can find out more about Michael Guest, as well as important resources that affect your faith, family, and freedom over at TonyPerkins.com.
Calling all university students. Are you looking to grow as a Christian leader and to equip yourself to change the culture? Join us at Family Research Council for our internship program. With a speaker series focusing on careers and callings, lectures from prominent conservative leaders, and weekly biblical worldview training, you will grow personally and professionally. This paid 12 to 15 week program will give you real world experience. Apply today at frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. While many Americans are trying to figure out if the COVID shot is necessary for them personally, some big companies and the federal government are starting to demand that employees get the shot. And that leaves many wondering if that's even legal. Joining guest host Joseph Backholm to talk about it is Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Council.
Matt, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Well, let's start with the vaccine requirements for federal employees. We talked about that in the last segment. Are these legal or not?
They're not. In fact, the emergency use authorization law is very clear and is also the FDA statements, including the FDA fact sheet that goes along with the authorization of these particular injections, COVID injections regarding Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. And it says this explicitly, that any individual has the, quote, option to accept or refuse, close quote, the product. You have the option to accept or refuse. The Department of Justice, in its memo on that issue, on the very first page, acknowledged that's what the federal law said. And they repeated it many times throughout their memo. But then, inexplicably, they say that the option to accept or refuse means that we have the requirement to tell you you have the option to accept or refuse. But after that, we can force these shots. It's absolutely absurd. The federal emergency use authorization law authorizes certain medications, either those that are already in existence or those to be created, for emergency use when there's not sufficient data. They are called experimental and investigational in the language of the FDA. And that's why you can't force these particular products, including all of these drugs. But they did anyway, and they said that the VA is going to have to take them, then federal employees. We pushed back, and we're still pushing back. We're working with a lot of VA employees, and now the VA has kind of backtracked a little bit, and they're giving the employees an option to check a box to opt out because they realize that this is a violation of the federal law.
Now, vaccine mandates are not unprecedented in American history. Smallpox vaccines were once required, and the Supreme Court actually said that was constitutional. Is this a different situation than the smallpox vaccine?
Well, when we look back, that was 105 years ago. That was before the First Amendment was ever incorporated into the individual states, and it was before the whole jurisprudence of the First Amendment that developed. So that's really antiquated law. And in fact, there's other federal law, there's state laws that really provide protection. No one can be forced to take this particular shot. Look, we did this before with the swine flu. We stopped that failed experiment after 53 cumulative deaths. Right now, we're having an average over the last 7 months of 57 deaths every single day from these COVID shots. We're having more deaths in one day from the shots alone that are recorded by the CDC than all the cumulative deaths from the swine flu, which we ultimately stopped. And we remember not too long ago, we forced the soldiers to take the anthrax vaccine. Well, you know, many soldiers are still suffering from that today. And that's why it's very critical that this remain an individual choice. People can make a decision to take this shot, but they also have their absolute right to refuse this shot. And many are refusing. So these mandates by the federal government, by states, by employers, and by schools violate a lot of federal laws, many state laws. And we are working with hundreds and hundreds of people across the country at all of these levels to make sure they have the freedom to choose what to inject in their body.
Another way that the governments are trying to compel people to get the vaccine is to make life so complicated if you don't have the vaccine through a vaccine passport. We saw this week Mayor de Blasio in New York do that. Is that approach legal for governments?
No, it's not. And in fact, many states have already banned vaccine passports. Florida led the lead in that situation. But look, you cannot check somebody's medical status at the door as a criteria to fly, as a criteria to patronize a restaurant or a grocery store. That's a violation of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, along with other state laws as well. So there's a lot of reasons, in addition to the emergency use authorization law, that you can't force these. We were going to file suit today against a very large university in Illinois on behalf of students. They had denied all of their religious exemptions. But at the last minute, just last night, they relented. But they relented only after these students got an attorney. Now, tomorrow, they're telling other students who don't have an attorney that they'll be expelled. They're bullying people, and they know they don't have a legal leg to stand on. So we may end up representing some of these expelled students next week. But the point is, there is no basis legally to enforce these shots. There's no basis to require the showing of some kind of vaccination status, whether by paper or electronic means, as a criteria to work, to shop, to dine, or to travel.
I suspect that we're going to hear quite a bit about this in the courts. It's encouraging to hear that development out of that Illinois University, because they were willing to stand up for themselves as students and get counsel. Are there other cases that you're aware of affecting either the vaccine mandates or vaccine passports?
Yes, there's a couple of cases that's been filed. We have been very successful at getting religious exemptions for all of the people that we represent, and we're representing them all over the country. And people that need help, they can go to lc.org and then click on the legal help tab, lc.org, legal help tab. And there's a sample religious exemption letter that they can use, and we can walk them through that. So we're getting a lot of success here, but we have been on the verge of filing twice, just literally hours away, until the defendant in those cases, one in Louisiana, one in Illinois, and in other places, back down. But we have lawsuits ready to go to make sure that nobody is forced against their will. And now we're starting to see this in the military. We're getting pleas from people in the military who are being told that the mandate's coming, and if they don't abide by it, they'll be court-martialed and dishonorably discharged. Look, the healthcare workers ran to the front line. They put their lives on the line for the last 18 months. So have our soldiers run to the front line to defend our freedom. We should not treat them this way, to tell them what they have to inject in their body, or they're going to be fired, or they're going to be dishonorably discharged. That is reprehensible, and we're going to defend them.
Matt Staver, Liberty Counsel, we're thankful that there are people like you there to defend them when they need it. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.